Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Allen.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here with you tonight.
Why are you here? We're talking to Carolyn Mace about Sacred Contracts, one of her many best-selling books. Welcome to the show, Greg Braden.
Well, good evening, Nicole. It's certainly a pleasure to hear your voice and a pleasure to be here tonight.
Well,
next on the News for the Soul Radio Network, it's the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, nutrition, natural medicine, advanced Ayurvedics, and more. Dr. Holly is a scientist, the author of 17 books, and a professional international speaker. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here now to help you achieve complete optimal health. Welcome, Dr. Holly, to News for the Soul.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to Wednesday. I hope you enjoyed the David Icke program. That got to be a replay. We seem to be losing an awful lot of his stuff lately, along with umpteen other people who are terrific investigators that love to challenge our dogma, accepted dogmas. And actually, we actually put a program on, 2 months ago, on we need to appreciate people who are called a conspiracy theorist or who are whistleblowers or what have you. In science, those people are terrifically appreciated. We want to challenge the system. We want to challenge the accepted dogmas. That's how we move forward. So as much as David Icke may not be a scientist, he's a great investigator, and he loves to challenge the system on a variety of different topics, and I don't always agree with him, but I love listening to his kind of stuff. So, thankful to Nicole for replaying one of his old interviews. Okay, another challenge to the system. I am repeatedly being asked, should I wear a mask? Are these masks detrimental? Are they beneficial? What kind of masks to wear? Oh, Lordy, I do not wear a mask. If you've been listening to the last few months, I've been listening for the last 5 years, if you've been listening to all the articles or programs we've done with regard to COVID from a huge number of perspectives, I'm sure you will have gained that although I try to be objective and look at all the different parameters and perspectives, I do think that this is incredibly strategically marketed. And one of the things does not add up in any way is this whole thing about masks. Yes, you're supposed to wear masks. No, you're not supposed to wear masks. Oh, only a particular type of mask, only for a particular type of time. They keep changing their minds. And I'm thinking, well, hold on a minute. Most of the masks that people are wearing, that they're creating, designing for themselves, it allows oxygen in. Well, if it can allow oxygen in, do you not think it can allow viruses and bacteria in? Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go through, actually, another one that I love watching is Dr. Buttar. There's a whole bunch. I have, at this point, 20 pages of websites, videotapes, YouTubes, etc., of professionals, researchers, physicians, people behind the scenes, people who are willing to challenge the scenes, etc. And of course, Dr. Buttar is one of them. So this actually was taken off his site. I've given you the reference right at the top. I've added in some information. So we're just going to go through 12 facts that we know about wearing these masks to protect yourself from COVID. So Nicole says she's already posted it, so that's great. Thank you, Nicole, again. Let's just go through them one by one. The first one, no studies have been done to demonstrate or the N95 mask has any effect on transmission of COVID-19. As a matter of fact, research published in the Annals of Internal Medicine on the 1st of April indicate both surgical and cotton masks seem to be ineffective in preventing the dissemination of SARS-CoV-2 from the coughs of patients with COVID-19. No kidding. Like, come on, people. Right from the beginning, it was shown that it was ineffective. All right, number two. In February, holy cow, that seems so long ago in terms of COVID-19, but let's go back to February 2020. There was a meta-analysis. Meta-analysis just means there was a huge compilation of analysis done of 6 randomized controlled studies involving 9,171 patients. No statistical difference in preventing influenza or viral infections using the N95 respirators and surgical masks. A second study saying, I mean, if the N55s are ineffective, certainly cotton and all the rest of them are going to be ineffective as well. I mean, that's just basic common sense, right? Okay, let's go to the third one. In May, oh my goodness, 4 months later, a study involving 159 healthcare workers found that 81% developed headaches from wearing a face mask. So not only are they incredibly ineffective, now we're seeing, even with the surgical ones, that they are causing problems. 2008, okay, so now we're going back a few years, 12 years. 53 surgeons studied wearing surgical masks. And researchers found that the mask reduced the blood oxygen level significantly, creating a condition known as hypoxia. Well, you don't want to decrease the oxygen levels, and especially if it's a virus that's affecting the lungs, reducing oxygen levels is the last thing you want to do. We need it for our brain, for crying out loud. We've got surgeons who have decreased blood oxygen level, which means less oxygen is getting to the brain. That's not what you want during surgery, never mind any other type. So now, not only, and obviously that's probably why we're about 81% developing headaches, is because we've got low oxygen levels. Holy cow. People are walking around with these silly masks on. Okay, let's go to number five, 2015, more recent. Study indicated that in hypoxia, that's the low oxygen level, inhibits your T lymphocytes. Now, T cells are, and TH cells are a predominant type of immune cell that you need, and it fights the viral infections. So by decreasing the level of oxygen, increasing hypoxia, you are inhibiting your immune cells from protecting you. Holy cow, that's huge. So wearing a mask actually sets you up better for having COVID-19 because you don't have the immune strength to fight it. That's not very good. All right. I'm being dramatic here as I can, trying to get the point across. So I'm also having a lot of fun with this because I think it's nonsense. Okay, hypoxia, again, low oxygen, blood oxygen levels, promotes inflammation. Inflammation is what? Part of your immune system. Well, we know that the immune system is down because the T lymphocytes can't function. You do have like 50 different types of immune cells, so that's just one type. Recognize that. We have to be clear here. But hypoxia does inflammation, which in turn allows for the growth, invasion, and spread of cancer. So if you have, like, we create about 1 million cancer cells a day, they hypothesize, they suggest. But if you've got a good, healthy immune system, just like we all have yeast, we all have cancer, we all have a huge number of things. And that's why we have such a huge immune system. It needs to fight and keep all these things under control. But when the hypoxia, the low levels of oxygen, affect how your immune system can function, promotes inflammation, then things like cancer can in fact spread because your immune system can't fight it as effectively. And it's not just cancer. Atherosclerosis, which then increases stroke and heart attacks, and oh dear. Like, if they actually did studies, I mean, remember, studies are expensive. So you've got to look at who's creating the study and what's the purpose, why. Is it done by pharmaceutical companies to promote a prescription drug? Is it done to protect? Is it, you know, what is the purpose of the study? You always have to look at that. And I didn't go into all that for these because I just took it off to Dr. Boudard's site because it was just so well done. I thought, there's no point going any further than that from what I've already presented in other sessions we've done. Okay, let's go on to number 7. The actual warning on the box of surgical masks says this product will not provide any protection against COVID, coronavirus, or other virus or contaminants. I love that. Like, awesome. Come on, people. Really? It's telling you outright. That's like buying a box of cigarettes, buying a box of cancer, I was going to say. Buying a box of cigarettes. It clearly tells you it can and will provoke not only cancer, but all kinds of other issues, but you continue to smoke it thinking you're okay. Like, oh, Lordy. Okay. Number 8. Those who wear masks are constantly, think about it, rebreathing. Not just the viruses, but the bacteria, the mold, the yeast, whatever's in the air, the heavy metal toxicities, the dust, the blah, 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 blah. So once you've got them in the mask, the probability of you rebreathing them goes up dramatically. You don't exhale properly. You don't get enough oxygen. And will concentrate in the nasal passages, enter the olfactory nerves, and can travel into the brain. Yes, that is absolutely true. But the other thing that's even funnier to that, or more pathetic if you want, is those that wear a mask, but only up to the nose. They cover the mouth, but not the nose. And I'm thinking, well, in theory, I'm supposing that you're wearing the mask to protect you from what's in the air that you breathe through the nose, but you're only wearing the mask up to the nose. So it's like, what is the point of this silly mask in the first place? I just don't get it. Okay, number 9. Even Dr. Fauci, I'm not keen on Dr. Fauci for a lot of different reasons, but he did do an interview on 60 Minutes where he said people shouldn't be walking around wearing masks. Now, it's one of the few comments that came out of him that I actually appreciate. I'm going to go to, actually, no, we'll wait for that till the end. I was going to say I'll add in another component here, but we will wait till the end. Let's go to the World Health Organization. It says that there is no need for healthy people to wear face masks. They recommend healthy people only wear masks when taking care of someone infected with COVID. Well, actually, and that reference there didn't get highlighted. I don't know why. That's interesting. There it is. It's on my sheet. Probably won't be on your sheet, but there is a reference there for you for that. There's a reference for everything in here. Now, there's a huge difference between people who are healthy and unhealthy. If you have a healthy, active immune system, there should be no issue whatsoever. If you are immunocompromised, if you're a senior citizen that is immunocompromised, that has heart issues, respiratory issues, that's on a variety of medications, those are the people that we should have been addressing. But those are really the only people that have been addressed, should have been addressed. The stats is basically the same across all your viruses, 92 to 98% of those that have fatalities due to a flu virus, retrovirus, are those who are senior citizens who have immunocompromised systems, who have two existing, at least two, I mean, if you have many of them, three, four, five, exist pre-existing conditions. That makes sense. If you're a cancer patient, you have an immunocompromised system. That makes sense. And this is where I was going to add in the additional piece I was going to say earlier. One of the things that is promoted repeatedly on advertisements and websites and what have you is don't put your hands to your face. I disagree. Your hands have more bacteria, virus, mold, you know, whatever, than any other part of your body. It is associated with everything that's touching, whether it be faucets or doorknobs or whatever. It's in connection with the car, in connection with what other people have touched. So it has the highest probability of having the most pathogenic material, which is why we're always being told make a regular habit of washing your hands. Wash your hands for 20 seconds or more. I mean, that's been around for, what, 50, 60 years. That's nothing new. But when they say don't put it to your face, that's where I have an issue. Putting it to, if you're a healthy human being, and we just said there's a big difference between being healthy versus being immunocompromised, but if you're a healthy person, Putting your hands to your face allows your immune system to develop antigens to protect you from the virus, the bacteria, the whatever happens to be going around. And we have hundreds of them going around every year, all the time. They float around in the trade winds. You know, they really, there's not much difference between a droplet and an aerosol, but they move in the atmosphere either way. And that's all the time. We also have a tremendous amount that's in our food, not just in our air, but in our food and in our water. And our immune system is fighting all the time. So again, when you put your hands to your face, you're allowing your system to develop the antigens necessary to fight the pathogen. Now, again, if you're immunocompromised, if your immune system is already fighting, then that's when you don't put your hands to your face. You don't want to add extra stress to the immune system if it's already compromised. That is just basic one. Well, this takes me back to, we're going to do a little side trip here. My grandmother used to always say, don't go out in the cold because you'll catch a cold. My mom would always say, well, that's just nonsense. Going out in the cold is not going to give you a cold. Well, they were both right. If you're healthy, going out in the cold is going to strengthen your immune system. But if your immune system is already compromised, then going out in the cold could actually cause problems. So again, showing you the big difference between are you healthy or are you not healthy. If you're healthy, you operate one way. If you're not healthy, you operate another way. Golly gee whiz, we've known that for thousands of years. Nothing new there. But again, if you're healthy, don't be wearing the mask unless you're specifically going to be working with people with COVID. Then okay, especially if you're immunocompromised, then you might wear a mask for a short period of time. If you wear it for a long period of time, you are, and they say, depending on the study, a long period of time can be more than 2 minutes, it can be more than 2 hours, it can be more than 4 hours. So I'll leave that one up to you. It depends on the study you're looking at. Be careful with it. Okay, let's go on. That was the World Health Organization. Then we go to the Surgeon General, Jerome Adams, advised against the general public wearing face masks, saying they were not proven to be effective. So if you want to go to the professionals, the people at the top, well, we've got Dr. Fauci, who I don't normally agree with anyways, but and Dr. Adams, who have both said don't wear the face mask. So why is everybody running around wearing a face mask? Now, although the CDC recommends wearing masks, they admitted. So look at that. That's two big words. Recommended, but they admitted they do not have data to confirm that wearing a mask reduces the risk of contracting or spreading COVID-19. So we have all this information saying we shouldn't be wearing the masks. They're ineffective. There's no data to show any support for them. They cause hypoxia. They increase the number of pathogenic material that you're rebreathing into your lungs over and over and over again. Why would you be wearing a mask? It doesn't make any sense. So then Dr. Boutoir put in conclusion, I love the conclusions of the article. Wearing a mask is like installing a screen door in a submarine. I thought that was a beautiful analogy, like installing a screen door in a submarine. Those who wear them might as well wear their pants backwards as well. It's like putting up a chain link fence to keep out mosquitoes, which is what I was saying right at the beginning. For crying out loud, people, do you not get? I mean, you can't see this material. You can't see a bacteria. And a virus on a bacteria is, again, going down huge number of degrees. It is a tiny, tiny little wee, wee speck on a bacteria. You can't even see the bacteria, for crying out loud. You don't think that that's going to go through cloth or material? Okay, you get the message, I'm sure. It is a psychophobic security measure. I like that. It's not about protection. It's truly a case in groupthink and magical thinking and what I would call herd mentality. I've used that term actually. A couple of people asked me, what is herd mentality? They've never heard of it. Well, a herd mentality is a very, very old phrase. that identifies if you had a herd of cattle running over the side of the cliff, even though cattle are going down over the side of the cliff, the herd behind those first cattle still keep running because the herd's running. They all do what the herd's doing. So they're all creating suicide, in effect. That's groupthink. That's magical thinking. And due to the COVID fear-mongering from the mainstream, I love this, media liars, like, okay, I haven't actually said that, but I do agree with it. The lemmings are all wearing masks, despite the fact that even on the box, it says the mask does not protect you from COVID-19. Like, this is a hilarious article. It's a really sad commentary on the majority of people. But it's actually a funny article. And we were talking, friends, we're talking about it. It would be hilarious if they made a cartoon up on this to show people how ridiculous they're being. Okay, so he says further down, I refuse to mask up for the low IQ mob that's falling for the propaganda, not to mention the health risks by restricting oxygen. Think about it. There is a virus going around that attacks the respiratory system, and people want to put a mask on that limits the oxygen flowing through their respiratory system, forcing healthy people, I love this sentence, forcing healthy people to become immune compromised by constantly wearing masks that recirculate exhaled carbon dioxide. Your body makes carbon dioxide all the time. And it has to get it out of the system. When the blood goes from your heart, from your lung to your heart, and then out through your arteries, it's carrying oxygen. And when it gets back to the veins, comes back to the heart and into the lungs, the blood is then exchanging, the red blood cells are exchanging the carbon dioxide they've brought back for new oxygen. Carbon dioxide needs to be continually getting out of your system. If we got too much carbon dioxide, we become incredibly unhealthy, incredibly acidic, and we don't have oxygen to support the 101,001 different functions that the oxygen needs to do in the body. So let's go back and read that sentence again. Forcing healthy people to become immune suppressed, I would call it immunocompromised, immune suppressed by constantly wearing masks that recirculate exhaled carbon dioxide waste and deplete optimal oxygen uptake is at best misguided, at worst criminal, given the known data. Oh yeah, don't attack and insult those who have chosen not to wear a mask, as the study suggests that this is the wisest choice to make. He did a beautiful job on this article, which is why I added to it, but ultimately, if you didn't catch everything, then go to the site and read the article. Understand, if you have any question at all, whether or not you should be wearing masks, go through these facts about the masks. Use your brain. Don't be follow the herd mentality. Be wise. I love the Mark Twain quote, it's easier to fool people than to convince them that they've actually been fooled. People want to accept that they are right. So they will look at the data, they will twist information, they will do whatever to confirm that they are right. This is a big challenge with the whole medical profession. Think about it. These MDs, typically, I mean, not all of them, but I would like to think most of them, have gone through med school, put out the time, the energy, the finances to go through med school because they want to help people. So they've gone through 4+ years of pre-med. Then they go through 4+ years of school. Then they do their internships. They have put out a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of finance to help people. And now they have to pay to set up their office for all the equipment, for the staffing, what have you. And you want to turn around and tell them that, hold on a minute, this isn't working, this is wrong. You've been fed lies. The majority of them, the 80-20 rule applies, the majority of them are going to hang on to whatever they can to support that what they're doing is accurate, to support what they're doing is right, despite the evidence out there. Now, the other challenge to that is the medical journals, we've gone over this so many times, produce so much false information. And that, of course, keeps the doctors hooked by a system. They themselves, for the most part, have been scammed. Now, there's all kinds of them, yes, that have been paid to promote information that's wrong, that's false, and they do so for whatever reason, out of sheer ignorance, I don't know, because of their level of morals, because they desperately need the finances. I have no idea what the reasoning is behind those that are willing to support and purport the stuff that they know is false. Or they just turned a blind eye. I don't know. But that's why the saying, it's easier to fool people than to convince them that they've been fooled, by Mark Twain, applies hugely to the medical profession. When I was in med school, that was my biggest challenge. Hold on a minute. This isn't evidence. This is still a hypothesis. So you can't make that conclusion from that study. Or you can't use that analysis with that design. That doesn't work. But med students aren't taught to challenge the science. They're not taught to look at it with a critical, objective perspective. They're not even taught how to do good, healthy research. They're simply taught, this is the evidence. Listen, believe, follow through. Consequently, many, many of them are working the system without realizing how detrimental they are. Now, in turn, say you go to a naturopathic college, and there's 6 registered naturopathic colleges in North America. In Europe and Asia, it's different, and it's very high-end, and many physicians have to go through it as part of their program, depending on where you live. At least have to take in-depth nutrition and understand how the body functions from a nutritional perspective. But they will give you the allopathic system, which is Western medicine, as well as the naturopathic system. So you're getting both sides of the coin. Now, yes, they do recognize and admit that they have biases, and they explain why. But Western medicine isn't like that. They are taught a hugely biased, inaccurate system, and then they're paid to promote it. And as many people said, they've ended up in the 20th century to simply be pimps for the pharmaceutical company. Which is horrendous. That's not about health. That's about managing symptoms. They're taught about disease and how to manage disease rather than being taught about health and how to optimize health. Dr. Buttar is one of the ones who's willing, like many, 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 many others that we have today, are willing to stand up to the system and say, don't agree. This is why. Here's the research. Let's look at it. So I invite you to do the same. Now, there is another side to that, and it's that there's so much information that is purported out there that is just simply replicated what somebody else has said without actually doing the research, which is why I actually gave you the research articles that these statements were taken from. Go do your research. Be an intelligent person who's willing to say, well, why should I believe Dr. Holly? Why should I believe Dr. Buttar or anybody else? Good. Go do your research. I challenge you to go do the research. Look at what they're studying. Look at the hypotheses that they're making. Look at the conclusions they're making. And then draw your own conclusions and optimally stay healthy. Okay. That's my big passion-driven statement for the day. All right, now we got to go to some questions. And Nicole sent over quite a few questions today. Thank you, Nicole. And thank you, guys, also. I don't know if I ever say that, but thank you, guys, all for sending in the questions that you do. Nicole just takes some of them. We can't answer all of them, so we have to appreciate that. But thank you, Nicole, and thank you, everybody else. All right, let's start with Jane in Philadelphia. I've been having a lot of headaches and a buzzing in my ears for the past few weeks. I haven't changed my eating habits or anything and wondering what could be the cause. Would stress cause the buzzing? Could it be high blood pressure? Any advice or ideas would be great. Well, buzzing in the ears is typically called tinnitus. It can be a buzzing, it can be a ringing, it can be a background sound. People define it differently. But for most people, when they have it, it's actually accentuated at nighttime when there isn't any other distractions. And it can come and go, and it can be chronic, can be constant. So there's a number of different causes for tinnitus. It can be structural damage. You actually have three tiny little bones in your ear. It could be structural damage to those bones. It could be nerve damage. So the nerves that go from the ear, because your ears don't actually do the hearing, they send the information, just like your eyes don't see the seeing, they send the information to that part of the brain. So the eyes, it goes to what's called the occipital lobe. The ears, it goes to what's called the temporal lobe. And the temporal lobe manages the information and then tells you, your mindset, if you wish, what's actually going on. So damaged nerves can cause different frequencies, not only not to stop, but to continue on, as in tinnitus. Toxicities can cause tinnitus. Nutrient deficiencies can cause tinnitus. One of the most common that I see in my practice is a magnesium deficiency. So that's the easiest one to try and work with. Obviously, I'm not with you to look at whether or not there's structural or nerve issues going on, but you might want to try taking something like magnesium citrate. Take it for a couple of months. Typically, what I get people to do with magnesium, there's 13 different types of magnesium. Only three are bioavailable, magnesium citrate, mel citrate, and then there's a biglycate. That they're all good ones to take. When you take something like Magnilax, I think that's still on the market, that's a really cheap magnesium that you don't absorb, so it stays in the gut and irritates the lining of the gut, so that when you have constipation, if you take Magnilax, it allows the stool to move and to eliminate. In case we want you to absorb the magnesium. So you want to take something like a magnesium citrate. What I suggest to people is start with one at nighttime before bed. And then every 3 or 4 days, increase it by one until you start getting loose bowels. Now, you don't want to get to the point where you have diarrhea. You just want to get to the point that they're loose and then you back down again. That means the capacity of the intestine has reached its absorption capacity. So you want to back down. You don't want to just gift it to the toilet. You might want to, in a week, see if you can up it a little bit more, if you've got more absorption capacity developed. And for most people, they do. So they, again, go through another process of increase until they start getting loose. And then you can start bringing it back down again. Okay, and if you do that simple process, take it for a few, keep it increasing it until you get loose bowels, decrease it a bit, and then start again. That might solve, in my case, like I say, in my practice, that solves it most of the time. Very, very simple, very, very cheap, and very, very effective. If it doesn't solve the problem, that's one of the other issues that you need to go get further diagnostics for. So try the real cheap one first. If it works, great. If it doesn't, you have to go further. All right, let's try Tony in Ontario. I've never seen Tony spelled that way. Or maybe that's Tanjay. I'm not sure if that's a J or an E. Sorry, can't tell. In Ontario, I've been really struggling with depression for the past 3 months, and it's gotten a lot worse in recent weeks. I don't like the idea of pills. Can Dr. Holly make an alternative recommendation? Absolutely. As many of you know, I was a psychologist for 20 years. I challenged the system repeatedly. with regard to depression, I had people saying, you know, you're dehydrated. You need to be drinking water. That's what's causing the depression. You need movement. Let's start walking to the end of the sidewalk and back, and then down to the mailbox and back, and then around the block and back. And I'm going back like to the early 90s. Nobody else was doing that, but that's what I was doing. I also sent people to naturopaths. I sent people for colonics. Depending, I'd ask them a series of different questions, and depending on their answers, it's like, holy cow, this is what's going on. And despite the fact I had 100% success with these types of things, the College of Psychologists really, really didn't like it. Now, as many of you know, when I started developing all my other degrees and designations in health, the lawyers told me to put all those other degrees and designations in my maiden name and leave psychology in my married name. When the psychologist, because psychology, College of Psychologists, at least the one here, doesn't like dual designation. They want you just to be a psychologist and do nothing else. Well, I don't agree with that type of thinking. I think that's very minimalistic, and you should be eclectic. The more degrees and designations, the more study you've done in different areas, the more you can be effective. In my story short, college psychologists found out about it and tried to charge me with fraud. Well, of course, they couldn't do that because I hadn't committed fraud, but they tried. So the long and short of the study is I worked for 20 years with people that had about 30% of my practice was depression. I've written one of my first books. Again, they didn't like that. The first book was Depression, the Real Cause, Maybe in Your Body. So you can go to my site, drhollybooks.com, and you can pick up the book on depression. But we'll go over a few of the things that can cause depression here. We've also done many other sessions on depression. So once Nicole gets the archives back, she's had a challenge with her system being compromised here, News for the Soul. So once she gets her system back, you'll be able to go back into the archives because we've done quite a few sessions on depression. All right. So psychologically, depression can come from a number of things. A sense of loss of control, whether that be at work, with finances, your relationship, etc. It can be the result of ongoing grieving that is not getting better or not getting resolved. Nicole just sent me a note that my archives are all fine. So, yes, you can go into the archives and look at it more in depth. Thank you, Nicole, for that. All right. Depression can also be a result of habits that you've developed, usually without realizing it, of how you perceive, interpret, organize, and respond to the world. Typically, those come from childhood or come from a number of repeated situations in life that you've had a similar response to. They now become a habit, whether you're aware of them or not. So those psychologically, those are your basic common denominators for depression. However, depression can be due to nutrient deficiency. Again, magnesium. I have been able to eliminate so many cases of depression simply using magnesium. Another one is, remember, magnesium is used for over 300 functions in a basic cell, not a complicated cell, just a very basic cell. It's required 180 times just for the cells to make, for one mitochondria in one cell to make one compound of fuel. Magnesium is huge, and most of us are depleted because it's no longer in the soil, so the plants don't have it, so we don't have it. So then we go back to what Holly's forever saying, grow your own food. Make sure that you get the nutrients that you need. If you've got a yard, plant vegetables. If you've got just a balcony, turn it into a hothouse. If you've just got a windowsill, put in a herb garden. But grow your own vegetables so that you get the nutrients that you need. Now, the brain is also made up of about 70% fats, your EPAs, your DHAs, your ALAs, etc. Omega-3s are huge to the brain. We need those omega-3s. They're anti-inflammatories, but they're used for a variety of different things as well. Vitamin D, sunlight, fatty fish, your tuna, your salmon, cheese, egg yolks. Get your vitamin D. We're coming up to summer. Get out there. Get walking, regardless of what your particular area may say about not meeting in groups. Okay, so don't meet in groups, but you can go out for a walk. There's not too many places that have absolute lockdown. But get that sunlight. If you're in absolute lockdown, then get out on the balcony and get that sunlight. Our bodies require sunlight for so many different things. With the vitamin D, it requires the sunlight to make the vitamin D that we require for so many different things. B vitamins, again, B1, 2, and 3. Use about 70% of where the mitochondria use magnesium to make your fuel. About 70% of those spots also require B1, 2, and 3, so very important for energy. B12, incredibly important to mental health. B12 is one of the anemias. It's also very important to DNA, to blood, to nerve cells, a whole bunch of other stuff as well. B9, actually, there's been studies that have shown if you're low in B9, you will not have a response to antidepressants. But if the psychiatrists who are now putting you on a synthetic B9, go take the real B9 for crying out loud. And probably the B9 is the issue, not the antidepressant. Depson, I think, is the name of the compound that they're prescribing, which is basically a synthetic form of B9. Take the real thing. Get it in your leafy green vegetables, your broccoli, your spinach. Get it in citrus fruits, avocados, bananas, meats, dairy, eggs, beans, lentils, seeds, and nuts. For crying out loud, you can get it in so many places. Get the real thing. Amino acids. You need amino acids to make neurotransmitters. A really good source, and enzymes in the brain as well, but and to form the nerve themselves. But a real good hemp oil. Make sure it's a good hemp oil grown in a good soil. You get all your, both your essential and non-essential amino acids. Iron, again, like B12, can cause anemia, affects your low red blood cells that carry oxygen to the brain. If the brain's not getting enough oxygen, guess what? You're going to feel depressed. Goodness, gee whiz. Where can you get iron? Dark leafy veggies, your beans, your lentils, cashews. It's the only nut that I actually like is a cashew, and baked potatoes. Iodine, again, iodine is predominantly used for the thyroid to make the T3 and T4. It was only about, 10, 12 years ago they found out how much T3 and T4 actually cross the blood-brain barrier and are in the brain cells as well. So where do you get your iodine from? Tuna, shrimp, a variety of seaweeds. I never know how to pronounce them. Wakame, nori, kombu, as well as eggs, dairy. And I know dairy. Cows produce a lot more vitamin D and iodine in the winter, in the summer months than they do in the winter months because they're not getting the sunlight. Well, imagine if the cows are kept inside all day long. Are they going to produce as much? No, they're not. So you want to have fresh or real grazed cattle that are eating grass and operating like cows should operate. Another place you can get it is Himalayan salt, prunes. Make sure you drink lots of water if you're eating prunes, and lima beans. Selenium is another one. Again, helps the thyroid. Now, we know the reason I brought the thyroid in here a couple of different times is hypothyroid is very much linked to depression. But as we've talked about many, many times, because you've got low T3 and you're put on Synthroid, does not mean it's a thyroid issue. 80% of your conversion from T4 to T3 happens in the liver. So if you have liver issues, that can be the problem. And if you have either or hypo, that's low or high adrenal functioning, the cortisol can interfere with the enzymes that actually do the conversion of T4 to T3. I hope you got all that. Basic line is, if it's thyroid, it could actually be your, and most likely, your liver and or your adrenals. Okay? So, nutrient deficiencies. Magnesium, omega-3, vitamin D, B1, 2, 3, 9, and 12, amino acids, iron, iodine, and selenium. Those are all just a few of the nutrient deficiencies. There's actually more. Those are the most common. Now, in addition to that, you can have a heavy metal toxicity. Golly gee whiz. That, too, can cause depression. Let's see. Mercury. It's the most common one initially, back historically. Your fillings, your vaccinations, your salmon fish. Lead from paint prior to 1978, I think. Children's toys, pacifiers, bottles, and your workplace, especially if your batteries, if you're doing renos in an older home, if you work in auto repair shops, all those types of things can leave you with lead toxicity. Aluminum toxicity, it can be in the workspace, air, it can be in food additives, it can be flour, baking powder, which also means your like cake mixes and pancake mixes, your frozen doughs, et cetera, et cetera. Coloring agents, it can be found in medications, oh my goodness. So aluminum, vaccinations, antacids, astringents, antiperspirants, well, antiperspirants aren't actually a medication, but buffered aspirin. Cosmetics, food additives, water supplies. Can't think of anything else off the top of my head. But that being said, mercury, lead, and aluminum can all cause problems with neurotransmitters. They can disturb what's called acetylcholine, which is an important neurotransmitter in the brain. Lead poisoning can deplete the GABA, which is another hugely important, it's your primary, what's called inhibitory neurotransmitter in the brain. And if you get GABA, then you can have sleeping problems, you can have seizures, you could have all kinds of things if there's a significant deficiency in GABA. I don't make GABA myself because of my genetic disorder, so I depend on the probiotics to make it for me. Smoking, which can cause lead issues, cadmium issues, arsenic issues, all of which can interfere with dopamine, which is another major neurotransmitter that's associated with pleasure and motivation and brain energy. Oh my God. Those can all cause depression. Okay? Now, if we haven't gone through enough to cause depression, pharmaceutical drugs, including antidepressants, can cause depression. What's it called? Isotretinoin, I think is how you pronounce it. It's medication used for acne, oral contraceptives, high blood pressure medications, anti-cholesterol or statin medications, anti-convulsant medications for seizures. They can all cause depression. So let's go through a little bit. Barbiturates like phenobarbital, benzodiazepines, they used to be considered the worst drug on the market until statin drugs came along. Benzodiazepines like clozapam, diazepam, lorazepam, which is Ativan, Valium, can all cause depression. Beta blockers used to treat high blood pressure, heart failure, chest pains, irregular heart rhythms. Actually, beta blockers can be used for migraines as well, like Lipressor and Atenolol. Can all cause depression. Calcium blockers, not just beta blockers, but calcium blockers, again, used for high blood rates. They relax the blood vessels. They're prescribed for chest pains, congestive heart failure. Can't think of anything right now. Cardizem, Tyvek, Calan, they all can cause depression. Opiates used to relieve pain. So everything from codeine to morphine to oxycodone, Dermeral, Paracan, they can all cause depression. Statin drugs used for cholesterol, which we know is a huge myth in and of itself, but Lipitor, Fesco, Pravitrol, Zocor, they can all cause depression. A drug that's used for shingles and herpes is called Zovirax. It can cause depression. Now, there is a whole huge issue of gut issues, a whole huge list of gut issues that can also cause depression. Don't forget, probiotics have been now associated with, for 20 years, cognitive issues, how we think and interpret the world, emotional issues, even behavioral issues, as well as all kinds of issues throughout the body. So gut issues can be huge when it comes to depression. So again, I've just gone over a few of the major ones if you want, but you can get my book, Depression, The Real Cause May Be in Your Body, if you want. I think it's like $8. You can get it off the website, download it, and it will have a huge number of issues that can cause depression. So no, I would not go on the antidepressants myself. I would be looking at what's causing the depression. What's the underlying issue causing it? All right. Now we go to Lorraine in Arizona. I get blurred vision a lot, but it is short term, like for a few couple hours on and off. Is it possibly a food allergy, something food related? I can't figure out why it would come and go. Actually, you can have visual issues. Now let's look at a few different things with the eyes first. Cataracts are when the eyes become clouded. Your vision becomes clouded. Diabetic retinopathy is sugar damage to the eye vessels and nerves. Glaucoma is a degeneration of the optic nerve, and macular degeneration is degeneration of the macula at the back of the eye. Now, for all of these things, you want to take care of your eyes. You don't want those issues. So it could be something as simple as low vitamin C. Our highest concentration of vitamin C is in the eyes. Red peppers, broccoli, kale, citrus fruits. Vitamin E, terrific antioxidants, very important to the eyes. Sunflower seeds and almonds. It could be low glutathione. You've heard me talk of glutathione 18 times. The second highest concentration of glutathione is in the eyes, and it works phenomenally well synchronistically with all your other antioxidants like your vitamin E and your vitamin C. how to help, simple ways to help improve your glutathione is your hemp oil, your milk thistle, your turmeric, all very good for helping to improve glutathione levels. Lycopene you get from raw tomatoes, excellent for the eyes. Actually, I said raw tomatoes. You actually need to cook the tomato to get the lycopene. As much as I love raw tomatoes, right now I think I have 12 different types of tomato plants in my yard. And I love even just touching the leaf. That smell from the tomato plants is just awesome. Tomatoes, fresh tomatoes have 10 times the flavor that you get out of any grocery store. And yet, it's when you cook tomatoes, as the Italians did with all their different sauces and what have you, then you break down the cellular structure. We really don't do that very well with the enzymes we have. So cooked tomatoes, if you have eye issues, is a lot better for you. Cook it in all your cooking foods. Use your paste, your pastas, your whatever to get that lycopene, because we need to break it down to get the lycopene. Zinc. The reason zinc is important is it's a part, it's a compound that's associated, either a part of or a precursor or what have you, with all kinds of different enzymes. Now, we have over 10,000 enzymes in our body, and zinc is a part of many of the essential ones. Superoxide dismutase, which comes second to glutathione in terms of being the best antioxidant in the body, very important to the eyes. And so where do you get zinc from? Oysters and pumpkin seeds are the two major ones I always say. Now, the carotenoids like lutein and zeaxanthin are hugely important for the eyes. Where can you get those? Things like spinach and your green leafy vegetables, your Swiss chard, parsley, egg yolks. And you absorb them better when there's good healthy fats in the system like avocados. So put avocados in your salad along with spinach and kale, and there you got it. Levels of vitamin A are important to the eyes. Where do you get your vitamin A? Your eggs, your dairy, your various fruits and vegetables, spinach, carrots, kale, etc. Omega-3s are important to the eyes. Now, the DHA is huge in the retina of the eye. But your EPAs and ALAs are also important. They can come from fish oils, from avocados, from hemp and flax and chia seeds, etc. So all of those things can be very important to the eyes. Now, having said that, going back to what you asked, could it be a food allergy? Yeah, it could. It could also be a degeneration of a nerve. And typically for those types of things, including diet, we want foods that are high in PQQ because that helps to damage nerves. It could be a variety of different things. So number one, I will say try the easy, simple things first. Get these foods into your diet. If it works and solves the problem, then yay, obviously. But if it doesn't, then you need to go get checked out for what else it could be. Okay, but do know, you asked, is it food-related? My sense of being food-related is you're not getting sufficient nutrient. Now, another component of that is say you've got leaky gut syndrome. And you've got too much of the bad bacteria than the good bacteria. And some of those bad bacteria are creating leaks in your gut. And you're losing nutrient that you're not, that should be going into your blood, into your liver, back into your blood, into your brain, into your eyes. But you're not getting it because you got leaky gut syndrome. So that could cause it. There's a variety of heavy metal toxicities that actually prevent you from absorbing different nutrients. So it could be a heavy metal toxicity. Like we already said, it could be a nerve issue. So there are always a variety of different causes for any given symptom. We've said that over and over again. So just remember that, know that. And let's quickly, we got 1254. Let's just quickly, we've got a couple more here that Nicole sent, but we'll try and quickly squeeze in another one. Angela in Vancouver, my mother has been diagnosed with dementia. I'm concerned about her being overprescribed medication. Dr. Holly, aware of any good resources? Well, number one, Angela, make sure that you know what dementia she has, because most doctors still put everybody into Alzheimer's. That right now, there's over 100 different dementias being studied. And what's well known is that if you put them on medication for Alzheimer's and it's not Alzheimer's, typically what happens is they look good for the first couple of weeks and then they start to deteriorate even faster. Now, to give you two examples, both my mom and dad were diagnosed with Alzheimer's. My mom, it was Lewy body syndrome. And it took me 3 years to get them to acknowledge that, yes, she didn't have macular. She didn't have Parkinson's. She didn't have Alzheimer's. She had Lewy body syndrome. Fortunately, neither allopathic nor naturopathic medicine had any way to resolve Lewy body syndrome. We tried a number of different things. We experimented with different things, but ultimately we couldn't help resolve it. My dad, on the other hand, I know what he's got is small vessel syndrome. I know why. It's because he has such high sugar content. The sugar is causing AGEs, advanced glycation end products. Those cause amyloids. Together, the AGEs and the amyloids block up your vascular system, especially in the brain and in the heart, the small vessels. And so do the amyloids. And they cause inflammation and blah, blah, blah. So get rid of the sugars. We got rid of the small vessel syndrome. But you got to remember, you know, the cup's already full, so any little bit of sugar can cause a whole lot of damage. Is that what's causing the dementia? So I always get people, you know, if you're coming to me, we can identify which dementia it actually is. If you're going to physicians in your area, make sure that you go to a few different ones and that you get well tested. You know exactly what's causing the problem. And many of the dementias we could actually totally reverse. If you go on the medication like L-DOPA, it'll actually make things worse. So number one, make sure that you've got an accurate diagnosis. Remember, we've gone over studies here where 88% of diagnoses are either incomplete or outright wrong. You've got to make sure you've got the right diagnosis, because then you know what's applied for the brain. It could be just low fatty acids, like your EPA, your ALA, your DHA. Those are hugely important to the brain. We can get those back to the brain if that's what's deficient. It could be low magnesium. It could be all kinds of different nutrient deficiencies. It could be different metal toxicities, like ALA. It is a metal toxicity issue, right? There's so many things that are misdiagnosed because people are categorized simply and quickly and easily. So my big issue when it comes to dementia is make sure you've gone through a number of different tests and you're accurate in what diagnosis it is, and then look for the alternatives to resolve it, not to medicate it, not to manage it, but to resolve it, because there are many options out there. And on that side is 12:58. We have Anna in the UK. I will try to get through to you next week, Anna, along with some others. In the meantime, this is Dr. Holly with Choices Unlimited for Health and Wellness. You can go to my website, choicesunlimited.ca, for a ton of information, for books, for other websites that I have for contact information if you want to contact me. Ultimately, I want you to make wise choices. I want you to make healthy choices. I want you to eat healthy. Grow your gardens. We always have to throw that in, especially in today's age. Throw it in. Grow your own gardens to whatever extent you can. Make it a great week. Be happy. Rise above all the fear-mongering and anxiety-provoking and what have you, and capacity. And we'll talk with you again next week. Take very good care. Bye-bye, then.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.